This podcast is brought to you by Racing New South Wales, Sky Racing and Pride's Easy Feed.
A message for trainers of thoroughbred, standardbred and performance horses. Pride's Easy Feed would like you to know a little more about a new product called Energy Pack, a top-up feed designed to replace cracked or flaked corn in a horse's diet. Energy Pack comes in small cubes of extruded corn and full-fat soybean and is six times more digestible than raw corn. Energy Pack isn't a complete feed. You simply use it to top up your horse's normal ration. Energy Pack will help you to stay ahead in the war against acidosis. Energy Pack comes in 20-kilo bags and is a palatable concentrated source of energy. Speaking of acidosis, Pride's also recommends Easy Light, a great tasting electrolyte. Its glucose and fruit flavouring is just the ticket for those fussy eaters. For best results, feed Easy Light as part of your horse's balanced ration. Replace those lost salts and keep your horses on their water through the long hot summer. Pride's Easy Light and Pride's Energy Pack, a winning double from Pride's Easy Feed. Masters in the field of equine nutrition. Angela Davies grew up in the first house ever built in Faunce Street at Gosford, directly opposite the racecourse horse float entrance. She learned the language of racing from her father Bruce, who'd been an on-course bookie and in later life known to take the odd bet on the telephone or at the back door of the house. She wanted to be a jockey, but was discouraged by her dad, who gave female jockeys little hope of ever gaining recognition. From an early age, she was mesmerised by the constant procession of horses around the neighbourhood. Later, she dabbled in pony club, dressage, show jumping, and on starting work, she borrowed enough money to purchase an Arabian stallion and set up a small stud enterprise at nearby Narara. Her transition to training was gradual and unspectacular. After a succession of failures, she bought her first yearling at a Tamworth sale for $1,250. She called him Bowl Cutter, and she won with him first up at Cessnock. From that point on, it was slow going. Money was scarce, and so were owners. But not once did this lady contemplate throwing in the towel. 40 years on, and Angela Davies can look back on some wonderful achievements with horses of humble origins. Her talents as a trainer are widely respected, exceeded only by her reputation as a straight shooter when it comes to the business side of her career. Angela Davies wasn't the first kid to latch onto a dream early in life, and she won't be the last. But few have chased that dream with more fervour than the kid from Faunce Street at Gosford. Let's say hello to Angela Davies.
Good morning, John Tapp.
Well, now, you've just returned from the Randwick Trials, where your very promising four-year-old Caradada ran a pleasing third to I Am Me in a very hot open trial. You must be tickled pink.
Yeah, look, I was delighted with how he went today. He really hit the line hard and very, very strong trial, Hawaii 5-0, I Am Me, several others that are, you know, sort of definitely racing well above his grade, you know, group threes and group twos. So it was a hot trial and he went absolutely super.
He's won 4 from 7 so far. The most recent was at a Canterbury night meeting. And the following morning, you got a hell of a shock. He had a temperature.
Yes, look, unfortunately, he won so well. And, we got home, and on the Sunday morning, he pulled up, or the Saturday morning, he had a high temp. And unfortunately, Johnny, it didn't clear in 48 hours, and we were, you know, had to make a decision to sort of put him in the paddock and rest him, and had to treat him with penicillin, which puts us out of action for at least a month. We just decided to give him the month out and head towards the provincial championships.
I imagine he'd have had a decent blow after the trial.
Yes, he had a good blow, but, you know, not excessive, Johnny, but a good blow. It's certainly going to bring him on for the qualifier at Gosford Saturday week.
Yeah, all right. And there are several other qualifiers should you decide to delay that return.
Yes, and I mean, the important thing is, Johnny, is, you know, you've only got to run 1-2. You don't really have to win the race. So if we just, you know, run second, I think Through the Cracks run second in his qualifier and he won the final. So, you know, it doesn't always have to be winning the qualifier. So as long as we qualify and we get our opportunity, John.
Throughout your career, you've been trying to source horses for your loyal clients at affordable prices. You attended the recent Inglis Premier Sale in Melbourne and you came away with two very nice fillies at realistic prices. What are they?
Yes, lovely Hanseatic filly out of a Fastnet Rock mare, and we only paid $30,000 for her. So, you know, she'll be there'll be shares offered, 10% shares and 5% shares offered in her. So she'll be a lovely cheap horse for anyone that wanted to get into a horse. And the other filly is an even sort of better opportunity for people that, you know, just want to get into it without it costing them, you know, a lot of money to buy a horse. She was a Doubtland filly out of an Exceed and Excel mare, lovely strong filly, looks like a two-year-old type. And the gentleman's willing to lease her at 20%. So that's very, very, the only upfront cost would be you just have to pay for the breaking in, the group of people that lease her. That's all. And then you've got her for 3 years to do with what you want and hopefully win a golden slipper or something with her.
Oh, my word. Good luck with them both. And I'm sure they'll have new owners very, very shortly. You've proven many times over that you can quickly identify talent in a new horse and then develop that talent over time. You've got one right now by the name of Al Coberson, with whom you've won 5 from 9. In one of those wins, he broke a 27-year-old track record at Rose Hill. He was absolutely awesome on the day.
Yes, he was dynamic, and you know, it was run that quickly in the middle stages, John. I just thought, oh, wow, is he going to be able to finish off? You know, they were going so quick. And then he just went around that horse and just came away from him. And I went, wow, I really do have something quite special here. And when they said he'd won, you know, broken a 27-year track record, I just went, wow,
yeah,
you know.
It was amazing. Amazing.
And what an achievement, you know, like to break, you know, to go to Rose Hill where, you know, Golden Slipper and 1,200-metre races, horses like All Our Mob, to have broken his record was, you know, a career high for me, no doubt, no doubt.
Well, he raced again at Randwick on March 2nd on a day when the fence was off. He went too keenly. He was pestered by another horse from the start. He still ran third. He's a nice horse going forward, Angela. What happens next?
Well, I'm just going to give him a let up now. Not that there's anything wrong with him, but it's nice, Johnny, to be able to give them a let up when they're not bottomed out and when they haven't, you know, absolutely had enough. They tend to come back with a lot more vim and vigour and more keenness to race again. So we'll just give him a let up and then look at the program and see where we go from there.
For those who are intimidated by yearling prices, take heart from our Coberson. He's by a little-known colonial stallion called Kobayashi, and he's out of a mare who was borrowed for the season.
Yes, that was just crazy.
That's great.
Look, you don't know where they're going to come from. You don't know how the genetics are going to sort themselves out in utero, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got a horse that's got a big lung and a big heart and just, you know, that key vitamin A ability. You just don't know where it comes from.
Let's go back to those childhood days when you'd be out of bed pre-dawn to run across the road to watch the horses work at Gosford. But your mum had one firm rule before she'd let you go across to the track. What was that?
Oh, I must eat my breakfast and have some Weet-Bix before I leave and go down to be running around at the stables. So I actually didn't eat any Weet-Bix. I put a couple of crumbs in the bottom with a little bit of milk and I just run in and go, look, I've eaten them both. I've got to go. I'm missing out on track work. I've got to go. I think I was about 4, Johnny. Honestly, I was only tiny.
Yeah.
There was photos of me and my top of my head was up to their knees. So that gives you some idea how small I was. I was just a little kid.
Ron Brown was the hapless trainer you terrorised most mornings. You got under his feet.
Yep. Yes, I certainly did. I could barely lift a feed tin. You should have seen me, but I'd try and feed them. I'd drag that feed tin down and try and lift it up. It's no wonder my body's breaking down now, Johnny, all that heavy work as a small child, eh?
Well, you were the right build and the right weight to make an apprentice jockey, but your dad, Bruce, wouldn't have a bar of it. We're going back 50 years, I might add, 1974.
You know, and he was probably correct, John, in what he said back then. He said, I think there was one New Zealand jockey, I can't even quite remember her name. I don't think there was even a female jockey in Australia at that time.
Yeah, probably Linda Jones, was it?
I think so, yes.
Yes, Linda. She'd actually ridden a Group 1 winner by that stage in New Zealand.
That's exactly right, yeah. But Australia had a real, you know, the general trainers, the male trainers back then just said, oh, the girls aren't strong enough, they can't use a whip, they can't, you know. That was the general rule, you know, that they could never be strong enough to be good jockeys.
Yeah, Pam O'Neill was underway by that stage, but
yes,
she was probably the only one, and she was fighting hard for recognition for the female riders. Look, the Rachel Kings, the Jamie Carrs, all of them owe so much to Pam O'Neill. She was a trailblazer.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, it was just perseverance, and now we just, you know, have a lot of girls coming through, and it's terrific. Like, it really is, you know. It's a bit with the training as well. There wasn't too many female trainers when I started. You know, we were a little bit, I used to get patted on the head by, you know, the gentleman I'd meet and say, give me a chance, let me train one of your horses. And they'd pat me on the head. Oh, never mind, love, good luck, off you go. You know, it was, you should be in the kitchen, you know, where you should be, and it's not on the race course.
It's all changed.
Definitely. A lot more respect now because, you know, women have sort of proven themselves that they are capable in the industry.
Well, your dad had been an on-course bookie, but in later life, he catered for those punters who used to knock on the back door on Saturday afternoons. SP betting was still rife in the early 1970s. Were you ever involved in these little transactions at the back door?
I was very aware there was a lot of things going on at the back door, Johnny, and I'd yell out to Mum, there's someone on the roof. What's he doing on the roof of the house? And it'd be Hollywood George with a set of binoculars, because he was barred from every race course, and he'd be sitting up on our roof watching the races as they're coming around Gosford.
I'm glad you mentioned Hollywood George, who'd been banned from Australian race courses by the AJC, but continued to bet in spectacular fashion.
And he
would find ingenious ways to watch the races. He was on the roof of your joint in Faunce Street.
Absolutely, and Dad would be inside, Mum would be yelling out, you know, what horse is coming around the corner? This is looking good, Pam. And shocking. Yeah, funny. Good times, cheeky times, but, yeah, good colourful characters and they made Australian racing, really, a lot of what went on back in that day, in those days.
Yeah, I hope your dad was getting a viewing fee from Mr. Edser.
I'm sure my father would not have missed out on getting something.
Well, Ange, it wasn't long before you were in Pony Club, participating in dressage, show jumping, hacking, you name it. You were hopelessly addicted to horses.
Absolutely, I was. There was, I remember, Johnny, not being able to afford a horse. You know, when I was young in my early days, and I used to carry a piece of rope in my back pocket, and I would go walk around. Always kids were around and running around at that stage, and if I spotted a pony in the paddock, I'd just go up. I wouldn't even know if it was broken in, make a little makeshift head collar out of it, and I'd jump on its back, and away I'd go. Oh, dear. You just look back at the things you do and just wonder how you didn't get killed, probably.
Yeah, and you're every bit as keen today. You started work as a bank clerk, and soon after, your business acumen surfaced. You borrowed some money, you bought an Arabian stallion, and you opened your own stud farm. Did that business take off?
Not really, but I bred a champion foal, so I had a good start there. But you know, it taught me a lot about business. You know, I was only young; I was 17 at the time, and you know, I borrowed money at the age of 17 to sort of you know, do a horse venture that I thought I could have made a lot of money out of. And as it turned out, didn't have as much luck, but certainly bred a couple of nice foals and then ended up, you know, thinking, oh, well, I need to pay this loan back. So we sold the mares and then I went to work managing retail, retail stores.
Fast forward to the mid-1980s. You've made up your mind you're going to train horses by hook or by crook. You started off with a filly you bought out of a paddock for $1,000. Did she get to the races?
Yes, she did, but she was a very bad bleeder. And not having – she hit the front one day at Newcastle. I think it was only about a second start. And she had a bad bleed, and that was sort of – that was the end of that. But I tell you what, it taught me – you know, I went and spoke to Neil Ward about her because I was living at Narara, and back in those days there was Riversdale and Wholesale Boom, Vane Top, and he was a shrewd and a smart, you know, trainer. And I remember going and spending a lot of time talking to him about, you know, the reasons why. And so I sort of, you know, he was a good mentor for me. In learning a lot about problems and what causes them, et cetera. So, because I never worked in a racing stable ever.
No.
So, you know, I wasn't savvy to any of, you know, a lot of what went on.
Neil's a good horseman. He's still there, isn't he? Still training a few.
Yes, he is. God love him. He's still got two in work down there at Gosford.
Good on him. And he calls the place, of course, Riverdale Lodge. And why wouldn't he?
That's it. That's the one. And I think the grandstand, downstairs grandstand at Gosford is called the Riverdale Bar at Gosford.
Neil won a couple of group ones. He won an Epsom with Riverdale, and he may have won a race in Melbourne called the Ampol Stakes, which was a group one.
It was a funny, Johnny, we had that much money on Riverdale, the people at Gosford. It was crazy. We backed him for the double, the Ampol, what was the other race?
The Epsom.
Ampol Epsom double. And we all backed him, all the locals, you know, that were all at the track. And we backed the horse for the double. It was just the greatest, sensational day when he won the Epsom.
Well, after that bleeder, you tried a few more cheapies with no luck. And then you went to a Tamworth sale and you bought your first ever yearling for $1,250. You called him Bowl Cutter. Is this the horse you tell me was a very capable buck jumper?
Yes. He got rid of everybody. He was terrible horse. He just would decide to buck at any moment. And it got to the stage, absolutely no one would ride him at Gosford. They just said no. And the only one was Bobby Law's apprentice, Billy Denmark, was the only one that would get on him. So I thought, well, I owe him the ride. So he won. He actually won a two-year-old race on Jungle Juice Cup Day at Cessnock.
Yes,
and
he
had his first start. And it was the first two-year-old race. He was my first yearling I'd bought. And we won that day. So that was a lot of firsts. It was a first for the sire as well. Sovereign Falu, I think he was called.
Yeah. And that was
Nothing of a sire, that's for sure.
1989. You started to buy cheaper yearlings after that at smaller sales, syndicate them, and hope for the best. And you did get odd one that others didn't want too. You know, the odd tried horse would walk through the gate. And you started to win with some pretty ordinary horses. Freight won a race at Gosford. Emperor Big Nose won a couple at Gosford. Tinctures won a couple at Warwick Farm. Timekeeper won some races. Purple Dane won a race at Warwick Farm. And by now, Angela, people are starting to realise you could get one going.
That was probably the very beginning of it, Johnny. People started pricking their ears a little bit and, you know, going, wow, she won again, wow, she won again. And then I had a cut, you know, I went for, I think it was Michael Beattie, you know, Michael Beattie, he's up in Grafton now. And now he was at Gosford and he pulled me aside one day and he was our CEO at Gosford at that time. And he said to me, he said, are you well aware of your strike rate? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, do you know how many winners you've trained in the last 5 years? And I said, well, no, not really. He said, compared to your runners to winners. And I said, no, why? And he said, you've got the best strike rate in New South Wales. He said, and you've got four horses in work.
Goodness me.
He said, runners to winners. He said, I could not believe it. He said, I started going through your horses and, you know, seeing how you went. he said, and I just could not believe it. And I couldn't believe it either. I went, oh, really? I hadn't really taken much notice of it, you know. And then it sort of went from there. It just, you know, I had some great runs with horses and, yeah, won a lot of races for people and brought a lot of joy to small owners that couldn't really afford to go and, you know, spend $100,000 on a yearling. We'd go and spend 10 or 15 and they'd all get together and spend $1,500 each. And, you know, it's exciting, Johnny. You make their life very happy when you can get them to the races and win races, that's for sure.
Michael Beatty nowadays is back in his hometown of Grafton. He's the CEO of the Clarence River Jockey Club. He dabbles in horse ownership himself. And,
yes, he certainly does.
He's a very good judge, a very astute man, and I'm not surprised that he was the one to unveil your statistics all those years ago.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah, he just checked it out, and there it was. And actually, I don't know, maybe it was a good omen because I just kept getting my strike rate getting better, and I just kept going forward. So, yeah, it was crazy.
There's a good story about a mare called Clipper, who arrived at your place in foal. She hadn't won a race in ages, and you were in for a very pleasant surprise. You won at Scone, then she won a benchmark 78 at Randwick. Next thing, she's in the Takeover Target Stakes at Gosford.
Yes, look, she was a lovely mare, and she's got a very nice, I think, a stern colt now on her that she had in her belly. But, yeah, I just sort of said when this new group of owners came, I said, well, you know, what do you expect me to do? He said, oh, well, I'd like you to win on a Saturday for me.
Oh, yeah, no trouble.
And I went, wow, it hasn't won a race for 18 months and it was out of form. And anyway, we got her going. She just thrived and thrived here in the yards and just a quiet environment. And, I think I gave her three runs for two wins.
Yes.
Yeah, so she went super. And then she, of course, you've only got X amount of days to have them. I think they're only allowed, it's about 4 months roughly.
Yeah.
There is a day rate. But we just ran out of time and she had to be sent to the paddock. But, it's the first mare in foal I've ever trained, certainly. Mm. It was an experience, that's for sure.
Ange, I'll get you to stand by for a moment. We're going to clear a commitment on the podcast and we'll come back after this. Anybody with even a casual interest in racing will be focused on Rose Hill Gardens on Saturday, March 23rd, when the Australian Turf Club and Racing New South Wales proudly present the running of the $5 million TAB Golden Slipper. Have a look at the supporting card. The agency George Ryder worth $1 million. The Group 1 Randwick Stakes $1 million, a pipe opener for the Queen Elizabeth. The Kiora Galaxy $1 million and the Sky Racing Active Rose Hill Guineas $750,000. Fillies and mares will be well catered for with the Group 3 Birthday Card, the Group 3 Epona Stakes, while the Group 3 Mannion Cup will be an added attraction. It's pleasing to see the continuation of the Derby Munro Stakes, honouring the memory of one of the greatest riders in the history of Australian racing, David Hugh Munro, who died in 1966 at just 53, won 3 Melbourne Cups, 5 Cox Plates, and a huge list of feature races, some of them several times over. He got to ride many of the best horses of his era. Old Darb would be chuffed to think he's being remembered once again on Golden Slipper Day. She's a Stalker had some ability. 2 wins at Canterbury, and you won the Magic Millions 3-year-old at Wyong with She's a Stalker. She didn't last long.
No, unfortunately, Johnny, she had a throat problem and that throat problem continued to get worse. And unfortunately, she was retired. We did give her a throat operation, but it really wasn't successful and she ended up being retired. And she was a broodmare. She's now died since. Mm. So, yeah.
You won 5 races with a horse called Wait and Watch, including
Oh, my goodness.
One
wasn't
at Randwick.
He a wonderful horse?
Yeah, he went amiss, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And, Johnny, I never really saw the best of him either. He won the Malcolm Cusack there at Gosford as well. Feature race they do at Gosford. I think it's on Bell of the Turf Day. Anyway, he won that as well. And Oh, look, I never really stretched him out. I reckon he was a better horse again if he had a remain sound, you know. But, gee, I think I paid $20,000 for him at Magic Millions. Goodness, and that was Magic Millions January. Yeah. $20,000 is nearly unheard of. So, yeah.
You wouldn't find one now.
Oh, golly, good luck. Oh, it dear just me. Doesn't happen anymore. $200,000 you can start at. Okay?
Now, Machine Gun Jubs. Didn't yes. even have a mare's name, but won
no.
six races, six placings, 230,000. Hey, people were starting to take you pretty seriously by this stage, weren't they?
Yes, definitely, definitely. And, gee, she was a handy little mare as well. She went by the wayside eventually with her knees. She had a problem with her knees, and I told the client, you know, that she may have to retire because we'd tried doing what we could for her to help her. She did continue on with another trainer, but she never ever won another race.
No.
So, you know, unfortunately, Johnny, I'm usually pretty right. I give him every opportunity to try and help them, but I'm pretty right usually when I think they've had enough and,
yeah.
you know, they can't manage with whatever problem they have, it's usually pretty right. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I've jotted seven names down here, Angela, other winners that you prepared in more recent years who won between them 26 races. Cafe Nero,
oh, wow.
Queen Ablaze,
yep.
Single and
yep.
Free, Magic Cassius, Sir Magic, Monaco and Jerusha. 26 wins between them.
Wow, that's incredible.
Mm.
That's good going. And a couple of them put a few together as well. You know, the old picket fence. We like the picket fence.
Mm. I'll say we do. Our Coberson's got a nice little picket fence there at the moment.
He's got a nice picket fence. We've got to get Caradata to get a picket fence.
I'm sure he will, and I know you're very confident that he will. Now, this little property up the road at Narara, you've had that place for 30 years. That's where you keep your horses. You love to have them outdoors whenever possible. What other facilities have you got there?
Well, we've got a nice big walker and just big yards and walk in and out boxes where they, you know, and it's just very peaceful, Johnny. You come back here, you can't hear any traffic. It's just they're back in there. They love it. They're back in their own environment, and it's quiet. And there's no horse noise. There's no racing. It's just when they're home, they just relax, and that's where they are. And it's just a nice place. And oh, I can't even imagine the amount of winners I've trained off the property. It would be incredible. I wouldn't know how many we've trained off here.
Mm.
And I started out with two stables. It was it's only a bit over an acre, and I had two stables at the back that had Shetland ponies in them when I bought it.
Mm.
And you should have seen how low we had to lift the roof because they were just – I couldn't even get under them, and I'm only 5'1".
Oh, dear.
So we had to lift the roof and convert them into, like, a bigger box to start with when I first began. So, yeah, it's strange when you look back how it all sort of began.
Yeah, it just happens. It evolves. You've got boxes at the racecourse too, haven't you, with adjoining yards?
Yes. I built some yards there because I wasn't happy having them there just in boxes. So every day, and we go in twice a day and rotate them so that every horse has a lovely canter around in a big yard and has a roll and can lay in the sun for a few hours every day and get out of their boxes, which, you know, if I was a horse, I wouldn't want to be in a box.
No. You were hoping to buy the colt by Wanted out of More Than a Cracker for $5,000 at the 2016 English Scone sale, but you were placed under enormous stress when you had to go to $7,500. 10 owners bought a share for $750 each, and they were gobsmacked when that horse went on to win seven races, eight placings, 627,000. Why did you call him Through the Cracks?
Oh, Johnny, I reckon it's a great name. I just said his mother was More Than a Cracker, so we had the crack side of it.
Mm.
And I said to my foreman, Meg, I said, gee whiz, I've bought one. And I said, I think it's fallen through the cracks.
Ah.
And she said, wow, that'd be a good name, Through the Cracks. And I said,
yeah.
And I said, yeah, he fell through the cracks, all right. So,
oh, didn't he do a job? He won five of his first 11 before running second at Newcastle in a heat of the provincial championship, won by R. Harani. Jenny Duggan was on board that day, but James McDonald was very keen to get on him in the final at Randwick, and he did.
Yes, definitely. It was, he said to me, James, the morning of, or, you know, when we got to the races that day, and that was Sydney Cup day, and I think he had races all day. And he said, this is the horse I was most excited about all day riding. And I said, you're kidding. And he said, no. He said, he was the one I wanted to ride. He said, out of everything all day, I was excited to ride this horse today. And I went, wow. So, yeah, you know, all of a sudden I've got James McDonald on my little $7,500 yearling.
Yeah, well, that was very encouraging to hear him say that, because James, I mean, an outsider for James on any given Saturday is an $8 pop.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, through the cracks, he did win a Metro race at Newcastle on Hunter Day after that championship final, and he ran well, Ange, in several stakes races, but he was troubled constantly by foot issues. He didn't like hard tracks, did he?
No, and he ended up, his fetlocks ended up, you know, he just, his fetlocks wore out. The cartilage in his fetlocks eventually wore. I think he was 8 year old then. And, you know, he just wore out, basically. And I said, well, enough's enough. Horse has done a great job. So, you know, retirement. And he's happily now doing shows, and that with my foreman, Meg Booker.
Lovely. Selena Dreaming was a very talented mare who won five, and she ran six placings despite multiple issues. But when she was on song, that little girl could run. What were her problems?
Oh, she had pedal bone problems in her feet. She had multitude of problems, Johnny. She had knee issues, and yeah, we were always struggling to keep her sound, always. So when we did get her right, she'd go bang, and then when we struggled again with trying to keep her sound, that's when we, you know, we weren't quite on song. But yeah, they can be very challenging trying to, you know, get their problems sorted and get them to win. That's a big thing, getting them to sort of win with, you know, what issues they may have.
She's at the stud?
Yes, she's actually had a foal by Prague, and she's in foal to Wild Ruler.
And you'll be,
yeah, he was a good horse.
You'll be dropping hints left, right and centre that the progeny might turn up at Narara.
Yes. Well, I usually select the matings too. So I'll say, well, look, I selected the mating, so I think I'm entitled to train one. And out of all these fillies, Johnny, it's incredible. I haven't trained one daughter out of all my winning fillies yet. I've never trained a progeny.
Next generation, it'll happen. Now, in the late 1990s, motherhood kept you away from the horses for a while, about 3 years. You've got a daughter, Georgia. Yes. You've got a son called Jared. What ages are the kids?
Georgia is 24 and Jared's 28.
Any interest in horses?
Jared's a mad punter.
Oh.
He loves a bet. He loves a bet. And he's actually got shares in a couple of my horses now. So, they're keen. They're keen enthusiasts. He watches all my trials. He rang me on the way back from Randwick just then and said, "Wow, trial good that horse." And I said, "Yeah." So it's nice, and the kids take a really keen interest, you know, in my success and where we are with them. And even if I come home and I've had a bad day, Johnny, it's nice when they say, "You okay? You all right? How was your day? I know it was a bit rough today." So, you know, it's the highs and lows of this game, and, you know, to have your family always there backing you is really, really, you know, a nice thing.
Your reputation precedes you. And I believe you get frequent inquiries from the smaller players looking for shares in modestly priced horses, and you bend over backwards to oblige.
Yes, definitely do. Always trying to find, you know, shares for people at affordable prices. I think Alicia Roma, whom I've won, I think I won five with her, she was a leased horse that was offered to me, and we got everyone in her, and it cost them absolutely nothing. She was broken in and everything, and these guys had the ride of their lives. They had a ball with this filly. So, you know, it's affordable. It's affordable if, you know, you get the right people, you know, getting the right horses for you.
You pride yourself on having a nice little team around you at all times at Narara. People who love those horses as much as you do.
Yes, it's sort of the thing is that I'm very, very passionate about the animal itself, and I'm very passionate and very fussy about the horses being absolutely treated probably above and beyond us. I make sure that all the staff are extremely kind to them, and that we dot our I's and cross our T's and don't miss anything with them. You know, they're so well cared for, Johnny. You know, I think probably a care for a little bit better than the kids, you know. but then they're there to make us money. They're there to make us money. I don't think my kids are going to make me too much money, but the horses probably will.
Oh, you're a character. Now, I think it's fair to say you're at Gosford or in that region for the long haul. You haven't strayed very far from childhood days in Faunce Street, have you?
No, not at all. Not at all. I've only gone round the corner.
With no plans for relocating.
No, not at all. Not at all. And, you know, if you've ever, I don't know, you in Sydney, John?
Yes.
Yes. So our climate here, I thought about going to the Gold Coast. I went up there one summer with She's a Stalker, spent a month up there and thought, oh, goodness, I can't do a summer up here.
No.
And, you know, we come back to Sydney and no sooner we're sick of the heat and it's gone, no sooner we're sick of the cold and it disappears. I reckon we've got the best climate in Australia.
Yeah, good point.
So, you know, that's a reason I'd, you know, when you're working outdoors, Johnny, every day of the week in the cold and the dark, or, you know, in up early, if you're in terrible weather, gee, it makes the job harder.
Of course. Absolutely. You know, in one of our previous interviews, you told me something that bears repeating. You said you like to keep your horses as close to nature as possible. Take them where they can win, and most importantly, love them to death.
Yes, isn't that true? Yes, every day I feel the same way. I always go out, I'm checking them all the time. It's very personal. The way I do it's very personal. You know, they're not in a big stable. They're every one of them's sort of named. We know their characters. We know what they need, what they don't need, and that's probably been the secret to my success. It's not so much volume, it's care and understanding, and maybe being able to judge them when things aren't right, you know, and sort of backing off on them. And it's just a knowledge of your own horses, I think.
What is your preferred number? How many are you working currently?
12, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's me done. I can look after all 12 and keep a close watch on them all, but gets any more than that and it starts, oh dear, where's that horse? What's it doing? You know, I can keep my finger right on the pulse with a dozen of them.
Yeah. And two of that dozen are very, very exciting horses, our Cobuson and Caradada. I'll bet you must think about them in your quieter moments.
Yes, well, I was certainly thinking about Caradada on the way home in the truck, I can tell you, Johnny.
Yeah.
He gave me a little bit of excitement this morning, definitely.
No, great trial. Great trial and a very hard trial, tough trial, with horses like Hawaii 5-0 finished just behind him. He ran in the Everest Hawaii 5-0 and ran third in a Stradbroke last season.
That's what I mean, yeah. It's crazy. Crazy.
Well, Angela Davies, I've got to say, you are one of my all-time favourite podcastees. It's been an absolute delight to catch up and hear about your wonderful life with horses and a life you wouldn't swap for $1 million.
That's exactly right, Johnny.
Angela Davies, my special guest on a podcast produced by Supernova South. A message for trainers of thoroughbred, standardbred and performance horses. Pride's Easy Feed would like you to know a little more about a new product called Energy Pack, a top-up feed designed to replace cracked or flaked corn in a horse's diet. Energy Pack comes in small cubes of extruded corn and full-fat soybean and is 6 times more digestible than raw corn. Energy Pack isn't a complete feed. You simply use it to top up your horse's normal ration. Energy Pack will help you to stay ahead in the war against acidosis. Energy Pack comes in 20-kilo bags and is a palatable concentrated source of energy. Speaking of acidosis, Pride's also recommends Easy Light, a great tasting electrolyte. Its glucose and fruit flavouring is just the ticket for those fussy eaters. For best results, feed Easy Light as part of your horse's balanced ration. Replace those lost salts and keep your horses on their water through the long hot summer. Pride's Easy Light and Pride's Energy Pack, a winning double from Pride's Easy Feed. Masters in the field of equine nutrition.